Shalom. Thank you for joining us on this journey of discovery through the book of Deuteronomy.
Okay, welcome back. Very good morning once again, and we're continuing on our exciting journey through Deuteronomy. You know, we are trying to get through a lot of very interesting texts and provide you the background so that as you read through this book, hopefully the book comes alive for you in some ways, right? So as a result, we stop here and there to explain terms and hopefully describe some of the places so that you can actually have a point of reference when you look at this. But because we have so much to cover, I'm going to have to go really quickly and I'll summarize some sections. So in Deuteronomy chapter 2, we're still within the first three chapters where Moses is still giving some historical background to what happened in the years past. So here they have turned back finally, right? After failing to enter into the promised land, they've turned down and they've gone to Kadesh and they're traveling there in the land of Edom. And Edom is a land that's given to Esau. You can find this in Genesis chapter 25, verse 25, because it's Edom actually comes from a word that sounds like dumb, right? Dumb in Hebrew means blood, right? And red color. So the Edomite area, the mountains in Edom, if you travel past, you'll find that it's actually almost red color, right? So that area is sort of known as Edom, has many associations to red. And of course, Esau himself, Genesis 25:25 says he has red hair. I don't know how red, but probably red enough, right? And of course, the way he lost his birthright was over a bowl of what in Hebrew is, we get this translation, red bean soup, or what do you call it? Red lentil soup. But the Hebrew word for that bowl is ha'adom, ha'adom, the red, right? And that's the association of red. So this region where they travel in was actually a region previously given to Esau. So they were circling clockwise, right? Making a half circle from Kadesh, circling around the south of Edom, and then turning north again. They skirted the whole area. And God says in verse 4 and 5, you look at chapter 2, verse 4 and 5, it says, and command the people saying, you are about to pass through the territory of your brethren, the descendants of Esau who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. Therefore, watch yourselves carefully. Verse 5, do not meddle with them, for I will not give you any of their land, not so much as one footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession. Right? So it's really interesting because we always think about the promised land as only land promised to the children of Israel. As it turns out, actually God promises land to Esau. And later on, you see that God also promises land to Lot, or Lut, right, in Hebrew. His children also promised land. So God is a covenant God. He makes promises. We are very familiar with the covenant of Abraham, in which land was promised to the children and descendants of Abraham, right? But also, there have been land that's promised to Esau and to Lot, and subsequently to Ishmael and so on and so forth. Okay, so you have that as a kind of background. Now, in verse 7, it says, for the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hand. He knows you're trudging through this great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you, you have lacked nothing. That's really interesting, right? That in Deuteronomy chapter 1:45, you remember from previous episode, and if not, you're just joining us, you know, you might want to go back and listen to the previous episode. But if you remember, it says that God ignored their pleas. They cried out to God and God will not listen to them, right? But now we see that in this 40 years of them going through, God has actually been providing for them. I think that is really a picture of God's grace, right? Just because God is not answering your prayers or you're not getting what you are asking God for doesn't mean that God is not watching over you silently. I think that's a beautiful picture, isn't it? That, no, we may be going through difficult parts of our lives and maybe even going through some seasons where we are struggling with our obedience with God. And yet, during these 40 years, God says, you know, you have not lacked anything. I've provided for you, I've blessed you. And we have this being described again later on, but you know, God has been watching over them during these 40 years, right? So anyways, they go through, they continue to make their journey around. Verse 8 says the way of the wilderness, right? Direct Midbar, literally the way of the wilderness, what the New King James calls the road of the plain. That's road of plain sounds nice. Okay, way of the wilderness is actually basically going through pretty dry and hard ground, right? So they were going through this land. In verse 9, they are given a second warning. So early on, we had a warning not to touch Edom because that belongs to Esau. So in verse 9, it says, then the Lord said to me, do not harass. Okay, who is me? I guess that would be Moses, right? Do not harass Moab, nor contend with them in battle. Right, Moab in Hebrew. For I will not give you any of their land as possession, because I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as a possession. Right. So again, you have a second sort of like prohibition. Okay, this belongs to Esau. That belongs to Moab. At least belongs to Lot. Actually, there's more territory that belongs to Lot that we'll come to again. But here again, this area. Now, where is Ar? You know, actually, we don't know some of these places, right? But in Hebrew, B means in or with. So B'ar means in Ar, right? So maybe that's how you get the word Kadesh in B'arnia. I'm not sure. I'm just kind of making a guess from the sound of it, right? So in this land, they're not allowed to take the land of Moab, which is really interesting because in 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 7, you see that the north and the south kingdoms got together and fought against Moab, right? And I just kind of wonder, you know, what was the scope and extent? Was this prohibition only applicable while they are traveling through the land? But it doesn't sound like it because it's a promised land, right? So forever. Okay, so we get to chapter 2, verse 10 and 12. Okay, this is where earlier on I said we will talk about this a little bit more. Now, in my Bible, the New King James, it comes in brackets. Do you have brackets in your Bibles as well? Right? Now, you know, in the Hebrew, there are no brackets. So these brackets are actually later insertions by modern translators, right? And I wonder why they put the brackets, but partly because of the change in the tense of the words. It's like someone is talking in the first person, then someone describes something in maybe a third person, and they think, okay, this is probably a later clarification that someone else inserted, not that Moses was. You know, I'm doing a lot of bracketing here, right? Andrew reads something, and I say stop, and then I put a bracket. I think the translators feel that these verse 10 to 12 are really clarifications and explanatory, you know, notes that are in the side notes. So it says here, the Emim had dwelt there in past times. People were as great and numerous and tall. So there's some physical description, right? As the Anakim. So the Emim and the Anakim, these are probably people who joined the NBA, play basketball, right? They were regarded as giants like the Anakim, but the Moabites called them the Emim. So they are just same people, but maybe different names. And then you got these Horites, formerly dwelt in Seir, but the descendants of Esau dispossessed them, destroyed them. Okay, this one, we don't know if they are actually giants, but some background history about this particular folks, right? So the Emim, almost all the English translations actually use the brackets there, right? Now, you have thought, I think, that the Anakim died in the flood, and there was a question, I think, from the previous episode that someone asked, you know, didn't the Anakim all die in the flood? And because in Genesis chapter 7, verse 23, it says that all living things on the earth were destroyed and wiped out, right? Presumably, the only survivors were Noah and his family and the animals that he brought along. So it doesn't really add up here. Now, there's so many theories that people say now that maybe the angels came and did it again. I don't think so. I think they probably would have learned their lesson after the first time, you know? I mean, that was pretty bad. So we don't really know. We don't really know exactly. I don't want to get into a complex discussion about how we view how literal we take some of these descriptions in Genesis. But yeah, clearly there are still these Anakim who are descendants of Nephilim here, right? And then verse 13 to 15, you know, they're going through Seir, right? They're crossing through the Zered River. And I think I have a map. In the map here, I do have a picture of where the Zered River, like this here, just at the southeastern end of the Dead Sea. Now, the Dead Sea used to be one sea instead of just two things, but because it's drying up. But this is the Zered River. Out here is probably the city of Zoar. You know, Zoar is where Lot ran to after they escaped from Sodom and Gomorrah. So this is the Zered River. So they crossed the Zered River, right? And went past the Moabites, which is here, like the Moabs in the north. And God told them, do not take their land. You can pass through their land. You just can't take their land, right? So Kadesh Barnea must be somewhere down south here. And that's why you have in this picture, they placed it down here. So they dwelt 38 years in Kadesh Barnea, chapter 13 to 15. For indeed the hand of the Lord, For indeed the hand of the Lord was against them and they destroyed them from the midst of the camp until they was consumed. They were consumed. Verse 16. So it was when all the men of war, right? So maybe some women survived. They only counted the men of war because the men were the ones who chickened out. They didn't obey God, right? So all the men of war had finally perished. So they were just wandering, and God was just waiting until that whole generation perished, right? So what happens? When the all had finally perished except for Caleb, which means dog, right? And Joshua, and the Lord spoke to me saying, this day you are to cross over the Ar. Okay, so there's this river here called the Arnon River today, right? You can actually, we were there in our last trip. So probably you cross over here and you begin your proper conquest of the land. So after 40 years, the conquest really didn't begin at Jordan. Here is where they really began the conquest of the land, right? Well, I guess we are 2 verse 18, right? They finally crossed the river Arnon. And then you get to verse 19. In verse 19, you have this thing about, you know, when they come near the people of Ammon, do not harass them or meddle with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession. Therefore, I've given them to because I've given them to the descendants of Lot as a possession. Okay, how many of you remember what's the significance of Moab and Ammon? Anyone remember? Okay, so you remember, Lot comes out, he runs to Zoar, right? All the guys are killed, right? And these two daughters of Lot, they are not named, but they had no husbands and no sons. So they do this unbelievable thing to get their father drunk, right? And then they, we'll keep this PG 13, right? So something happened and they become pregnant with children. And these two children are Moab and Ammon, right? So that's why these two land of Moab and Ammon belongs to Lot. It's not like God so-called made a promise to Lot in the same way that he made a promise to, let's say, Abraham. But really for Esau, these are their heritage or maybe their ancestral tribal inheritance, so to speak, right? So that's what it means when it says this land belongs to them, right? Okay, so that's the land and we are at verse 20 now, right? So again, you have this, this also was regarded as the land of giants. So on this side, you also have giants inside, that means across from Jordan, up north in Hebron and the mountain of the Amorites, you have giants there. But here, another bracket, it says the Ammonites called these giants. So they were called Emim by the Moabites. The Ammonites called them Zamzumim. I think that's such a cool name, right? Don't name your kid Zamzumim, right? And why do they call them Zamzumim? Well, scholars are not really sure. They think that maybe there's something about them when they come, they make the sound of zoom, 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 or something like that, right? Then they call them the Zamzumim, right? They kind of thinks of maybe they're vuvuzelas, you know. So they had the, you know, they're making that sort of sound. Okay, so they were called the Zamzumim. The people were great and numerous and tall as the Anakim. So that's your point of reference. But the Lord destroyed them before them, dispossessed them, you know, just as he has done for the descendants of Esau who dwelt in Seir. He destroyed the Horites before them. They dispossessed. Okay, so all these people, the Avim, the Kephorim and Kephtorim and all these people were kicked out and then later on possessed by Lot and his descendants, right? And verse 24, rise, take your journey, cross over the river Arnon, all right? See, I've given you the land of Sihon. Okay, here's the beginning, right? The first great battle. the hand of Sihon the Amorite. Now, this is really interesting. So, if you're following, we are actually now over at, let's see, Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 24, right? Take your journey across the Arnon. So, the children of Israel now have turned north. They are going across the Arnon River, and they are going into the land of this king of Sihon. This land of Sihon, right? The Amorite. And king of Heshbon. He's the king of Heshbon. Begin to possess it and engage him in battle. So God tells Moses, okay, you are now going to start to make war. Okay, this is the beginning of the wars, of the conquest, still under Moses. And Moses could do this because this is not over the River Jordan yet, right? That's not part of that side of the land that God said he'll never go in. So here they went in, so they'll make a war. Okay, what's interesting is, really, when we get to, okay, let's just give more background. So, you got some messengers. Let's have Andrew read for us from verse 26 to 29.
Verse 26. And I sent messengers from the wilderness of Kedemoth to Sihon, king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, let me pass through your land. I will keep strictly to the road, and I will turn neither to the right nor to the left. Verse 28. You shall sell me food for money, that I may eat, and give me water for money, that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot. Verse 29, just as the descendants of Esau, who dwell in Seir with and the Moabites who dwell in Ar, did for me, until I cross the Jordan to the land which the Lord our God is giving us.
Okay, what's so interesting about this is the command that God gave Moses was what? To go and make war, right? Go into battle. But what does Moses do? So let's make peace. Well, that's exactly what it says. Let's see, what does it say here? I send messengers, verse 26, from the wilderness of Kedemoth, where they were, probably just after the Arnon, to Sihon the king with words of peace. Wow, this is super interesting, right? I have to wonder what is going on. Was this like a sneaky ploy, you know? Sun Tzu, art of war, right? Don't let them know you're coming. I don't really know. But in any case, you know, they try. No, I mean, what would have happened if the king of Heshbon, you know, Sihon said, oh, okay, you know, I'm a man of peace, you know, and would they have fought, you know? Well, whatever the case was, that was not going to happen. That was not going to happen because verse 30 says, but Sihon, the king of Heshbon, would not let us pass through, for the Lord your God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate, that he might deliver him into your hands as it is this day. Wow. Okay. So, you know, this is such a good picture. Sometimes we want to do what we want to do, but God has his way of getting his stuff done, right? I mean, and in this case, through the hardening of the heart of Sihon. And this word here, harden, that you have in the English, let's see, what verse are we in? Verse 30, right? So the word harden is... It's actually a very interesting word, kasha, and it's also a word used when God hardened the heart of Pharaoh, right, in Exodus chapter 7, verse 3. And but there are other words, right, in Exodus chapter 4, verse 21, 9, 12, and so on and so forth. God used another word, God strengthened or made him strong in his heart, right? That's hazak. And then other place, God make him proud. So, you know, it's not one magic word or anything like that. Just God has a way in his sovereignty of hardening. Now, we always wonder why, you know. If God hardens your heart, then is it your fault anymore? And I'm inclined to think that yes. I don't think it is just, I mean, when we write it down, it's like really simple, you know, it seems like black and white. But I think often it is part of their own pride that God allows them to have their own way. Okay, you want to be proud, go ahead, I'll let you be proud, right? So I think that's probably what happened here. Nebuchadnezzar also hardened his heart, right? Yeah. And so the other thing that I think is quite interesting from a textual point of view, how did this writer know that God hardened Sihon's heart? Right? How did he know? I mean, it's like you can't see these things, right? So it must have been, again, one of those conclusions that you come about by way of observation of the effects. And then retrospectively, you think, okay, this God probably hardened his heart, right? So I think when we read this, we have to have, I guess, some awareness of how this is being described to us and not to take an overly literal way of, because sometimes you get in trouble when you try to describe some of these things, right? Too literally. Okay, in any case, the guy hardens his heart and God hardens his heart. And verse 31, and the Lord said to me, see, I began to give Sihon and his land over to you, right? So you're going to have to fight, okay? You're not going to get out from this. Begin to possess it that you may inherit the land. And this really, as I said, is the beginning of the conquest, right? So from verse 32 onwards, the war begins. It begins with this battle at Yahaz, right? Or in your English version, it's Jahaz. But in Hebrew, there's no J sound. So it's Yahaz. So sometimes God causes problems, right? When we don't want to enter into His will. So God uses problems. So, you know, the next time you have problems in your life, well, maybe you should just pause for a little while. Maybe God is trying to help you get into His will, right? Putting certain obstacles, closing some doors and forcing you to go through certain God doors. And this is actually God's grace to us. I mean, I guess God's grace doesn't always feel good, right? But it is for our good. Okay, verse 34. Let's see, we're trying to go through all this. And we took all his cities at the time. Okay, we utterly destroyed. Okay, this is a word that you come... Harem. Okay, harem is a very interesting word. It sounds like a word that we might know in Malay, right? Haram, right? Haram means banned. And it's actually the similar root word. So in the context of Deuteronomy, you see this word a lot, and not just Deuteronomy, really through the first several books of the Bible. The word harem is really what is translated as utterly destroy, right? And it says here, we utterly destroyed, we harem, the men, the women, the little ones of every city, we left nothing, we left none remaining. Wow. Okay, you really have to think about this because I think many people have a struggle with how can God do such a thing? How can He utterly destroy? And I think I'm going to save this discussion because this is a really interesting discussion. We will have more of this discussion in Deuteronomy chapter 7 and 20. So, you know, stay tuned, okay? Don't change your channels. Stick with us. And when we get there, you have a really interesting discussion of what exactly is going on with this utter destruction, this hakherim, right? But here, they took the livestock, okay? Destroyed everything, but they took the livestock as plunder for themselves, right? And the spoil of the cities which they took. Now, we know that they were not always allowed to do this, right? Remember in the sin of Achan, all right? Or as we Singaporeans call Achan, right? It's Achan, our Asian version of Achan, right? So he was guilty of taking some of the precious things, right? Why? Again, this very interesting discussion will keep until later. But keep this note in mind. Here, they did take the animals, right? Although they killed everyone, including the little children. Verse 37, okay, only you did not go near the land of the people of Ammon, right? So there was some prohibition. I'm going to just skip over that. There's some interesting stuff that you can look. But we are finally in chapter 3, but we're almost out of time. But let's kind of press through chapter 3 real quick because I don't think it's very long, all right? And chapter 3, let's go to chapter 3. Okay. Continuing the conquest, right? They went up to Bashan. So they've gone through Heshbon. Now they proceed north against Og of Bashan, King Og of Bashan, right? And Og, we are told, is actually probably up north where you have the Golan Heights today, right? Golan Heights, just east of the Sea of Galilee. Verse 3 says that they struck them until nothing remained, right? They attacked him until he had no survivors remaining. So you have the same picture of utter destruction, no survivors remaining. So they didn't have to say again that the children were destroyed also. They took the cities. There was not a city which they didn't take. 60 cities. So just think about how many people got killed here. That's a lot of people who died, right? Assuming they actually killed and sacked and utterly destroyed every city, that's a lot of people who died in 60 cities. All these cities were fortified with high walls, gates, bars, besides many rural towns. They utterly destroyed them as they did King Sihon of Heshbon. So same thing, right? Men, women, children of every city. Wow. But all the livestock they took, so now they got, they have a lot of animals, right? They're traveling around with lots of animals and spoils. And that time we took the land of the hand of the two kings, the kings of Amorites, the two kings of the Amorites, which is this king of Bashan and Sihon of Heshbon. These two kings were the first two major conquests as they went into the land, right? So some interesting details there. Let's kind of skip forward a little bit. Verse 8, it says, we took the land from who were on this side of the Jordan, right? You see this? That were on this side of the Jordan, meaning that you're on this side of the Jordan, you're writing about this side of the Jordan, right? However, you have that same problem again, because in the Hebrew, it's Be'ava HaYaden, which actually means on the other side of the Jordan. So you can see that systematically throughout the whole book of Deuteronomy, the English translators, right, are actually obscuring this to make it sound like this was being written on the Transjordan. But in fact, if you look at the Hebrew, the actual translation is the perspective of someone who already crossed the Jordan talking about something that used to happen on the other side of the Jordan. So I just thought I'd mention that to you because maybe I'm a little bit of a nerd. I like these things, okay? So maybe that's that. And Moses allocates this newly conquered land to Reuben, to Gad, and the northern parts to the half-tribe of Manasseh, okay? Okay, so again, those of you who are listening to us on the podcast, you won't see the map, but you might want to download this. It's just a map I downloaded off the internet. But look at the allocation of land on this side of the Jordan, right? You see Reuben, you have Gad, and Manasseh. It's just a very big tribe there, right? They take up all this north part, and Bashan, you see that? That would be Bashan, that Golan Heights up there. So this really is roughly, of course, we don't know super exactly what it is, but this is how, you know, they had moved up and allocated the land by, by the time you get to Deuteronomy chapter 3, right? Okay, there are some other things I'm really trying to think. Maybe some of this we can read ourselves. Let's have Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 23 to 26. Maybe, Andrew, we can get you to exercise your vocal cords and read for us that.
Verse 23. Then I pleaded with the Lord at the time, saying, O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do anything like your works and your mighty deeds? I pray, let me cross over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, those pleasant mountains and Lebanon. But the Lord was angry with me on your account and would not listen to me. So the Lord said to me, enough of that. Speak no more to me of this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah and lift your eyes towards the west, the north, the south, and the east. Behold it with your eyes, for you shall not cross over this Jordan.
Okay, so you see this whole thing again about, you know, bad memory and... I find that rather amusing, all right? I mean, you know, Moses, of course, great prophet and all that, but I find this really interesting. Maybe it's a clue of how human we all are. Even great leaders, they are just human, you know what I mean? But he tries to kind of flop the blame over to the people, you guys, like, you guys caused me to do that, right? Actually, the word here, really, he pleaded, right? The word pleaded there, at Kenan. And Ken, of course, is the root word for grace. So quite literally, Moses asked God for grace. That's literally what he meant, right? Moses knew that he didn't deserve this. So he says, God, have grace on me. At Kenan, right? Give me grace. But God would not. God would not. So again, you have this picture of a very real God. He doesn't say yes to everything we ask. You know, sometimes we have this very caricature of a God that says yes to anything we want. Anything you ask, God will say yes. No, even Moses, right? I mean, arguably, there are few people who are as righteous, as humble as Moses. In fact, the Bible says there's no one as humble as him. He had done all these things, he's walked with God, and he asked for grace, and God will still say no. Because it's not according to the will of God, Or perhaps God had already made some decisions. You know, that's part of the reality of our own Christian spirituality. We have to learn to take no from God as an answer, as a valid answer. Sometimes, you know, we don't. And I guess you could see that Moses tried several times. I'm sure along that 40 years, I don't know how many times Moses would have gone up to God and said, God, you know, those people. And God said, no, not those people, you. I said, would you give me some grace? And God says, no, right? So finally God says, enough. Rav means too much. Okay, it's too much. The same word actually that Elijah said, enough, you know, I can't take any more of this, right? So God can't take any more. So I guess Moses has been nagging God for quite a bit, right? And God says, enough, right? I don't know, some of us are probably asking God, please let my son get into this school. Please, please, please. And God is in heaven saying, Rav, enough, okay? I've got another school for your son. And, you know, and Moses has to go up to a Mount Pisgah where he will get to see the land, okay? We're almost at the end. Maybe you can read for us until the end. And that will be Mount Nebo, right?
Verse 28, but command Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go over before this people and he shall cause them to inherit the land which you will see. So we stayed in the valley opposite Beth Peor. Verse 29.
And this really brings us to the end of this whole historical recounting, right? Chapters 1 to 3 is really just a prelude. The really fun stuff starts from here onwards. Chapter 4 is where you start to get all this really exciting discussions and things that are really relevant for many of us, all right? So, 1 to 3, we have all this. I'm just looking whether we have any questions coming in. How come we can't find any remains of these giants? Yeah, right. Okay, well, the photos that you see on the internet are actually known hoaxes. You can go and check them. People actually Photoshop this stuff. You know, with Photoshop these days, you can do amazing things, right? Even bring back giants' bones. But as far as we know, there have not been any remains of these giants, right? How come? Well, maybe we're not looking in the right place. Maybe they're completely destroyed. I mean, it could be so many reasons. There are lots of things we have not found. So I couldn't really answer why, right? This person called Bird, right? So can't answer that one. I don't know. Sometimes that's the best answer, right? Okay, so we're going to conclude here. And we are going to, in our next episode, get into really the statutes and the laws of Moses. And that would be so interesting for us, right? But until that, you know, walk in the way of the Lord.
We hope you enjoyed studying the Word of God. Join us again as we continue through the book of Devarim.